This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for September the 5th, 2019. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending September the 5th, 2019. Edited this week by Sonia Phillips, Sheila Shepherd and Jane Picard. Your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
David Baldwin.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am Noel Thorpe Tracy. The headlines this week are Butterfly Invasion Signals Climate Change, Project Backlash for TV's Kevin MacLeod, and Hospital Manager Invited to House of Lords Reception. So, may we have the first story, please, Heather.
Butterfly invasion signals climate change. Climate change is causing a striking butterfly from southern Europe to appear in record-breaking numbers across the south, wildlife charity Butterfly Conservation has said. More than 50 long-tailed blue butterflies and hundreds of the butterflies' eggs have been discovered over the last few weeks, which could result in the largest ever emergence in United Kingdom history. There's a picture of this butterfly. Apparently it's very small. It's got a creamy edge to its feathers. Then it's brown and that shades to blue as it gets nearer to the body. And the body itself is strongly blue. But the long tail refers to two tiny antenna-like projections from the back of the two lower wings. They're minute, however, onward and upward. Experts believe rising temperatures are behind the influx, with sightings of the butterfly coming in from Cornwall right across to Kent, as far north as Suffolk and even into Surrey, where the long-tailed blue hasn't been seen since 1990. Typically, only a handful of these exotic migrants from the Mediterranean reach the United Kingdom each summer. But this is the third time in 6 years that the butterfly has arrived in vastly increased numbers, and 2019 looks set to surpass the previous peaks witnessed in 2013 and 2015. Butterfly conservation volunteer and long-tailed blue expert Neil Humes said, "These butterflies have crossed the channel and are laying eggs in gardens, allotments and anywhere you can find broad-leaved everlasting pea and similar plants which the caterpillar likes to feed on. We've never recorded this many migrant adults before. It's completely unprecedented. In only a few days, I've found more than 100 eggs in Sussex alone. And the butterfly has been seen in Cornwall, Somerset, Devon, Dorset, Hampshire, Kent and Suffolk. We've even had a sighting in Glamorgan in South Wales. What's really exciting is that the long-tailed blue has gone further inland than it did in 2013 and 2015, with at least 3 confirmed sightings in Surrey, where the butterfly hasn't been seen for 30 years. The adults will keep laying eggs, and in September and October we'll see the first British-born offspring emerging. I strongly believe this will take the total number seen this year to well over 100, breaking all previous records for this butterfly in the United Kingdom. The long-tailed blue has previously been considered a very rare visitor to the United Kingdom, despite being abundant across southern Europe, Africa, Asia and Australia. The butterfly was seen for the first time in Britain in 1859, but over the next 80 years, only 30 adults were recorded. Big influxes occurred in 1945, 1990 and 2015, but none of these equaled the invasion of 2013, when 109 sightings were recorded between July and October. Neil added, "This is one of the world's most successful species of butterfly. It may be small, but it's a very powerful flyer, capable of crossing mountain ranges and seas. In hot weather, it can go through its entire life cycle in just over a month, which is half the period taken by many species."
Project Backlash for TV's Kevin MacLeod. A developer denies a breakdown in communication. A TV star and developer has come under fire from a city councillor as community facilities promised as part of a development are yet to be completed. That comes as investors in the Happiness Architecture Beauty, HAB, housing venture, launched by Grand Design's host Kevin MacLeod, voiced frustration at warnings they could lose up to 97% of their cash. The Chronicle first reported on the broken promises at the Loveden Fields development in Kingsworthy 6 months ago, and Ward Councillor Jackie Porter, who is also Cabinet Member for Built Environment and Wellbeing at Winchester City Council, said works are still yet to be completed. Councillor Porter said, "Work goes on very, very slowly. It's nowhere near finished. We want to see this site completed. We chose it because it had great public facilities. The residents of Kingsworthy are being let down. Mr. MacLeod had good intentions, but it was naive. This project was much more complicated than it was meant to be." As previously reported, the developer of HAB Housing agreed, as part of the planning approval, Eversley Park would double in size with a new allotment, cycle track, play area, orchard and car park. The land would then be given to Kingsworthy Parish Council to protect it from future development. The site, off Loveden Lane in Kingsworthy, was given planning approval in September 2015, and the development was opened in the spring of 2017 by the then-Mayor, Councillor Jane Rutter, and Mr. MacLeod. One resident, who did not wish to be named, said, "We are really happy with the house and the area. We like the idea of the estate. We kind of bought in to Kevin MacLeod. I've got no interest in seeing him here. He hasn't been here. He's been reluctant to come here and listen to our concerns. He was very happy to take our money. The communication has been really poor." In response, a spokesman for HAB Housing said, "With regard to our Loveden Fields development, understandably, we have been prioritising works on the houses of our home buyers, which have been diligently undertaking. Our intended plan has been to commence work on the community assets in the autumn, which continues to be the case. Throughout this process, we have been in continual dialogue with our home buyers, the parish and city councils, the other stakeholders, with frequent updates on progress and planned activities." Speaking after the Chronicle first broke the news in February, Mr. MacLeod's firm has issued a statement saying, "A Brexit-fuelled construction crisis had hit the industry, causing soaring construction costs and a shortage of skilled workers." Mr. MacLeod also issued a personal apology to the residents. He said, "As an SME, that's a small and medium-sized enterprise, house builder, we've been hit hard by rocketing costs and a construction skills crisis, both of which are being exacerbated by Brexit uncertainty and the fall in the pound. Of course, Brexit is absolutely no excuse for the poor service residents have received, and I am close to striking a deal to bring new partners whose expertise and financial backing will enable HAB to deliver something we can be proud of. I am hopeful of being able to make that announcement very shortly." Mr. MacLeod added, "I am personally very sorry for the delays and problems caused. Things haven't been done quickly enough. I share our residents' frustrations and am putting a plan in place to fix them." Last month, it was reported nationally that buyers of the bonds sold to investors in 2017 for HAB, launched by Mr. MacLeod in 2007, were told in a letter that an independent review of finances found they face significant losses. Mr. MacLeod resigned as a director of HAB Land Limited on February 16th, 2018. The letter to investors says bondholders can expect a return of between 26 pence and 3 pence for every pound of bond monies invested after the completion of two projects.
And here we have hospital manager invited to House of Lords reception. A hospital worker swapped hospital corridors for the House of Lords for a day after being invited to a special reception for NHS staff. Hayley Connolly, performance manager for the Radiology and Medical Imaging Department at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which runs hospitals in Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke, was invited by Lord Carter of Coles to a reception on behalf of the NHS National Demand and Capacity Programme. The invitation came following her work looking at demand and capacity within the speciality and how this is reported. By assessing demand and capacity, Hayley and the team can make informed decisions and plans to support timely care for patients who need X-rays and other types of scans. Hayley has undertaken this project alongside consultant radiologist at Hampshire Hospitals, Clive Vanderveld, and together they have been recognised as an example of good practice within the NHS nationally. At the event, Lord Carter, the official sponsor of the NHS Demand and Capacity Programme, explained that this modelling is central to addressing one of the issues and challenges currently faced by the NHS. Hayley said, "It was fantastic to be part of a prestigious event in such a beautiful building, and I felt proud and privileged to represent Hampshire Hospitals. It was great to be able to share the work we are doing at our trust with colleagues from other hospitals. I had a conversation with Lord Carter, who told me to be persistent, which is something that is already part of my work ethos, so that I can support my clinical colleagues in providing the best possible care to our patients." And that is accompanied by a photograph of the managers from various trusts, including Hayley Connolly, standing looking very proud and rather excited in front of the House of Lords.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines for this week. If you have any problems with the recording, or if you know of anyone else with sight impairment who might like to receive our free recordings, please contact Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. But before you call, please make sure that your playback box is properly plugged into the mains. We will now proceed with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Your Say, Belgarum, Letter from Westminster, Historical Items, Editorial Comment, Q&A, What's On, and the Almanac, and then we'll continue with items of general news. So, here are the death notices. Vine, Dorothy Alice Vine, née Yates, died peacefully 28th of August 2019 at Abbots Barton Care Home. Byatt, June Winifred, died on Wednesday, 21st of August, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Crabb, Francis Crabb, OBE, ED, formerly of Seward Close, Lions Hall and Sunrise, died peacefully, aged 96. Hickin, Anne Hickin, passed away peacefully on the 21st of August, 2019, aged 78 years. Leamy, Jill Leamy, passed away on 26th of August 2019 in Winchester Hospital. Lewis, Sarah Jane Lewis, passed away peacefully at home after a long battle with cancer, aged 60 years. Mitchell, Peter Robert Mitchell, 24th of March 1936 to the 24th of August 2019. Nicholson, Horace Nicholson, peacefully in hospital on the 5th of August 2019, aged 95. And finally, Gwen Rigby, passed away peacefully on the 21st of June 2019, aged 92, at Abbots Barton Care Home. So, Christian comment is read now by Jane.
And Christian comment this week is from Liz Tatham, Taking Time to Ponder God's Power. Well, there's a lot going on, isn't there? In these particularly interesting times, we are seeing and hearing much about power, jostling for it and going to some lengths to wield it to achieve ambitions and dreams. My family has been otherwise preoccupied at home. Lots of visitors, summer activities and moving house, which is always a distraction. And it's true what they say, it is very stressful. For the last week, we haven't had a television, the internet is dodgy, and packing, unpacking cases is our daily preoccupation. So, we're picking up the news here and there as we go and thinking about it on the periphery of our lives. Instead, I have been watching Autumn Come In. It is one of my favourite seasons, as I'm not keen on the summer heat and I love those chilly mornings and evenings. It is good to feel that slight thrill of excitement in the change of tree colours and the oncoming winter, even Advent and Christmas. Two aspects of the Gospels are on my mind then. Firstly, how did Jesus cope in the desert for 40 hot days and 40 cold nights? He had nothing but what he could find around him in the way of food and shelter. No shade, searching for water and insects to eat. I suppose he may have taken a shawl or other such thing to keep the chill off, but even so, not something I would easily volunteer for. However, we read in the narratives that he survived both the desert experience and the continual temptations by Satan. Resisting the various offers of food, supernatural and temporal power, Jesus relies only on God to provide and eventually to send angels to minister to him. The Gospel tells us that during this endurance, Jesus is taken to a high mountain and Satan offers him dominion over all the kingdoms that could be seen. However, the price is equally high, as it requires worshipping Satan. Jesus resists, of course, so at the end of the wilderness time, he is stronger, closer to God his Father, and has exposed his true humanity and divinity. This is a pivotal time in Jesus' life and ministry. It is about preparation and reliance. It shows complete trust and faith. Wilderness times happen to most of us during our lives, and relying on God to help and sustain us is all we can do. Offers of power and influence come to some and should be approached with caution and prayer, offered up to God to guide those who take on responsibility for the lives of others. As we continue to make our new home ordered and tidy, finding the television and so on, we are also quite enjoying watching the new habitat of nature around it. It is new and much smaller than our last garden, but still open to God's transforming and creative power. We should all be so open and allow his way to be the only way, as it is the best way for our world and for us. And that was from Liz Tatham.
Thank you, Jane. Now, there are 16 letters this week, and we're beginning with one read by Heather.
Calling alumni. We would love to catch up with some of the nearly 1,500 people in the Winchester area who studied at the University of Kent over the last 50 years, writes Alex Perkins. We'll be in Winchester on Wednesday, September the 11th, and hope to meet up with old friends and chat with former students about their time at the University of Kent. There'll be a buffet, and of course the first drink is on us. We'll even be showing a film of the campus as it is today and sharing 100 of our favourite pictures of university life over the past 50 years. We'll be in the Bishop on the Bridge, 1 the High Street, Winchester, from 6:30 p.m. on September the 11th. If you would like to come along, you can register for the event online or email us for more information. The email address is rajhiggins@kent.ac.uk, and then the rest is all lowercase, at kent.ac.uk, or follow the link on Facebook on the University of Kent alumni page. We look forward to seeing you there. Alex Perkins, Alumni Stewardship Officer, University of Kent, Rutherford Annex, Canterbury.
This is the first of several letters about the notorious Junction 9 of the M3 with the A34, and it's from Esther Hack. Sir, Parliament, Hampshire County Council and many others, including recent Winchester protesters, have agreed we have a climate emergency and an urgent need to reduce our CO2, for example, by driving less. Much thought and work has gone into M3 Junction 9 improvement scheme to speed travel, but in the longer term it will encourage more car travel, increasing emissions, until the junction again jams up. Just building this massive project would have a large carbon footprint. The traffic problem can be addressed whilst also reducing carbon emissions. The proposed scheme should be abandoned. the £110 million should be spent on. One, planning our towns and economy so that people can live near their work and amenities like shops. This involves taking the whole picture into account rather than the piecemeal market system which has given us chaos. People travel many miles daily to get to work. People get in a car to buy a pint of milk. Young people cannot live where they grew up, and thousands sleep on the streets. We need to create social and properly accessible housing. A referendum in St Ives banned second home owners from buying new houses. Radical action is possible. We as a community need to control housing so that it serves people and is not only driven by profit. Two, easy, safer and pleasant walking and cycling. Three, public education so we understand the implications of our car use. Four, better public transport, cheaper, more frequent, including evenings and weekends. Five, moving freight by rail. Six, less polluting vehicles. And seven, encouraging remote working. Substantial work has been done. There is much more to do. Highways England has £110 million for the M3 Junction 9. It is not available to councils who have had cuts of 60% between 2010 and 2020. Councils are our elected representatives who could lead regional planning and implementation. It defies common sense that while Parliament declares there is a climate emergency, funding cannot be used flexibly to address the problems. Instead, climate change, which endangers us all, will be made worse by this reckless scheme. That was from Esther Hack of Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And on the same theme, this letter from Simon Lever. Sir, the controversy surrounding the planned M3 junction has only recently been voiced, culminating in protests in Winchester. When the M3 was constructed, the plans to provide access to the A34 using the proven four-leaf clover layout was declined. It would have been an ideal time to have proceeded with the proven design and avoid major disruption and costs in the future. Further, a tunnel should have been considered rather than the crude destruction of Twyford Down. Now to the present and future. The amount of traffic leaving the M3 to access the A34 results in serious jams, creating much pollution as vehicles are stationary or moving slowly. This is a problem now and can only become worse in the future. While acknowledging the concerns of local residents and businesses, it is an issue that will not go away. In the same way that the initial M3 route and junction layout was not adopted, with hindsight and forward thinking, would it be best to proceed with the new junction layout for the sake of replicating an even more serious level of traffic chaos and accompanying pollution? The rainforest destruction taking place in Brazil is creating a potentially global disaster. Perhaps the protesters should consider directing their energy towards the UN to enforce an intrusive solution. And that was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Bob Whiteear writes about Junction 9. While reading with interest the whys and wherefores about pollution and environmental niceties, I have noticed that a lot of addresses are south of Junction 9. Hoping I am not wrong, but the general wind direction is from the south or southwest a great deal of the time. Therefore, a lot of people commenting may not know what the air pollution is like north of the junction at 9 at Kingsworthy or part of the Itchen Valley. Surely for that alone, it will be a benefit to some of us if we can stop the hold-ups of the traffic on top of the M3 all the way back to Kingsworthy, emitting poisonous gases onto our villages. The configuration of the junction is another matter. Yours on the northern side, Bob Whiteear, Church Lane, Easton.
This is from A. Williams, and it is his reaction to the proposal to suspend Parliament. Sir, I'm appalled that the government is suspending Parliament in September. With the Brexit deadline around the corner, it means MPs won't have time to pass laws to stop a no-deal Brexit or scrutinise the government at one of the most critical times in our country's history. This is an outrage and undermines the very idea of democracy. With just a few weeks before Brexit, we need politicians in Parliament doing their jobs to make sure we leave the European Union in the best possible way for the sake for future generations. That's why I've joined the campaign calling for Boris Johnson not to suspend Parliament, to ram through an undemocratic Brexit, which will do nothing to provide closure and bring the country back together. This is the time for MPs to showcase bold and decisive leadership. I'd like to encourage everyone else in our area to sign the petition at change.org, Stop the Coup. That was from A. Williams of Tichborne Down.
And another letter about Junction 9. Sir, the City Council may have voiced concerns about the environmental impact of the £130 million revamp of the M3 at Junction 9 and the Greens' call for Junction 9 work to be axed, as you report, Chronicle, August the 29th. But for those of us who have to join the Winnell roundabout from Spitfire Link, the revamp cannot come soon enough. This is the only entrance onto the roundabout that is not controlled by traffic lights. So you wait, sometimes for many minutes, for a gap in the traffic long enough to make a dash for it. On a bad day, you then find the traffic on the bridge has backed up to the point where you must either forego the opportunity or risk being stranded in the middle of the road with traffic bearing down on you. So, as soon as possible, please. And that is from David Griffith, Shepherdstown, Alresford.
Tim Lowry writes, diversion. So the Chronicle of August the 29th reported that Winchester City Council is concerned about the air quality and environmental impact of the proposed and necessary improvements at the M3A34A interchange and will be writing to Highways England accordingly. It would be fitting and consistent if the council objected in a similar fashion to the proposed closure of the Andover Road at King's Barton, which, unlike the M3A34 interchange improvements, is entirely unnecessary and diverts heavy traffic into a high-density housing development. And that comes from Tim Lowry at Newton Stacey.
And now for something appreciative for a change. This is from Barbara Langdon Mudge. Superb Gardens, it is entitled. Sir, recently I have been confined to the house for a couple of months. My first real outing was to be taken to sit in Abbey Gardens. How beautiful they looked, so well kept, and again gorgeous coloured beds. It was restful to be there and to see the many people of all ages enjoying the planting, which is always different, so well tended. A big thank you to the small band of gardeners whose work and dedication give us such pleasure. Well done. From Barbara Langdon Mudge, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
This letter from Robert Carter, which is headed Geeson Welcome, is actually about an article which we haven't yet read, but I hope we will do, a group that ran all the way from Winchester to Geeson, which is a city in Germany with which Winchester is twinned, which was a very, very long way. Geeson Welcome. Sir, we made it. What an adventure, and all the running in the baking sun was rewarded by the welcome we received in Geeson. Police escort, civic reception, dinner as guests of the city, and then an amazing welcome at Geeson Park Run. This from a city that was virtually destroyed by the RAF in 1944. The desire of the people of Geeson to build bridges with us and forge relationships for the future was humbling. At this time, when some in our country want to put at risk our relationship with our European friends, I wish they could have experienced the welcome we received in France, Belgium, Holland, and especially in Germany. Thank you to all the people who made this trip possible and to our sponsors who have all made a generous contribution to Winchester Hospice. And that was from Robert Carter, Managing Director, Millgate, Winchester Limited.
Martin Taylor writes to Charming Men. What a charming letter from Mark Rowe in your letters column of August the 29th, which seemed at first glance to be written as an advert for Winchester tourism. Until I realised that it was, beneath that veneer, an advert for the English Democrats Conference. I was surprised that the Chronicle was prepared to print the letter, given that, and I'm going to quote from Wikipedia, the English Democrats have welcomed defectors from the far-right British National Party into leadership roles. Martin Taylor, Mill Lane, Abbotsworthy.
This is from Andrew Adams and is entitled MP on Tour. Sir, I was interested to read of Steve Brine's summer tour in his column, Letter from Westminster, Chronicle, August 22nd, and cannot help compare it to the record-breaking tour concluded by Ed Sheeran this week. Ed's success can perhaps be attributed to his strategy of telling people where he would be each day, an approach our MP has shunned. All promises and links to the summer tour info on his website lead to a bland survey. He presumably doesn't want anyone to attend this tour on a planned basis, and rather merely engage with those who happen to pass by wherever he is, whenever he is there. This is a shame, as many of us would like to engage positively with our elected representative at this enormously challenging time for our country. He has taken a notable stand on the issues of a potential no-deal Brexit, and we would like to know how he plans to approach this issue with such potential impacts for our local economy in the months ahead. Perhaps a prize should be offered for the first of Steve's constituents to uncover his latest tour venue. That's from Andrew Adams, Harvest Court, Mitchell Devastation.
And Phil Yates, one of our regular contributors, also writes about Mark Rowe's letter, Oldest and Last, What About First? Sir, Mark Rowe's letter, Unique City, August the 29th in the Chronicle, relating, of course, to Winchester, can be extended to include buildings under the headings Oldest and Last. For example, Winchester College is the oldest public school in the country, founded in 1382 by William of Wykeham, Bishop of Winchester and Lord Chancellor. The Hospital of St. Cross, the oldest almshouses, founded in 1132 by Henry de Blois, Bishop of Winchester and grandson of William the Conqueror. And the City Mill, the oldest mill dating from Saxon times, still operating. Under the heading The Last, we have Hockley Viaduct, the last of its kind. The Theatre Royal, the last Cine Variety Theatre still operating. And finally, the Winchester Hope Church in Middlebrook Street was originally the last cinema to be built on the outbreak of World War II. It didn't open as the Ritz until April 1940. I'm sure there are many more. Any more firsts? And that was from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Teresa Skelton writes about policing in the city. Sir, at the Winchester City Council Cabinet meeting on August the 28th, I spoke on the need for honest, impartial and effective policing in the city. I pointed out that the official machinery of police leadership and regulation at the county level is profoundly dysfunctional, unresponsive to the public, and incapable of supplying the type of policing that our city wants and needs. The City Council needs to step into the breach, as do local councils everywhere, and Winchester Council could provide the template. Unfortunately, I was cut short in making my statement due to overrunning my 3 minutes by a few seconds immediately before I could pose the following questions. 1. Does the council have any future plans to set up a specific role of liaison officer between Winchester City Council and Hampshire Police? 2. What does the council think about the 11 police officers who were arrested for a variety of criminal offences, some of them extremely serious, as reported in the Hampshire Chronicle and the Daily Echo? 3. Is the council aware that local people's medical records have been unlawfully trawled without permission by different authorities, including the police? After I was curtailed, none of the city councillors seated around the top table engaged at all with the issues and proposals I was raising. After one more statement, mainly about housing, this time from Mr. Ian Tate, who in passing referred to blatant drug dealing in the centre of Winchester, the chairman immediately moved on to the next item on the agenda with no response to either of us. Much of the meeting was then taken up with discussions related to the interests of developers and investors in building over the area around Winchester Railway Station. This may reflect, interestingly, upon the ongoing priorities of our City Council, whatever party is nominally in control. Theresa Skelton, the Justice and Anti-Corruption Party, Hyde Close, Hyde, Winchester.
John Craggs writes about the Green Man in Southgate Street. Sir, Rhys Bolgaram's comment about the planned replacement of the engraved glass windows at the Green Man in Winchester, Chronicle, August 29th. I can remember when the Green Man was a very different kind of pub to what it is now. If those engraved windows survive those more turbulent years, then it seems an act of sacrilege to replace them now. John Craggs, Somerset Crescent, Chandler's Ford.
And another letter from one of our regular contributors, Daphne E. Smith. And Daphne writes about losing sight. Sir, once upon a time I could read and write until I enjoined the ever-increasing ranks of people who are suffering from age-related macular degeneration. I have always enjoyed writing. The words flow rapidly, but I regret I cannot say this about figure work. A column of figures can possibly lead to a panic attack. As I can no longer read my incoming mail, I'm dependent on someone reading my post. Fortunately, I have nieces who help me with my correspondence and emailing. People ask me, when are you going to write a book? The answer is, never. I prefer to concentrate on short pieces of which I have had a reasonable amount published over the years and hope to continue as long as I can. The RNIB keep me well supplied with talking books and magazines. Thankfully, I also receive an audio copy of this newspaper every Saturday. And hopefully you receive the talking magazine once a month, Daphne. And thank you, and I hope you are listening to this at this moment, from all of us here at the Talking Newspaper.
Speed crackdown, writes Tony Stevens. So I was surprised and disappointed to read David Tate's letter in the Chronicle last week regarding the lack of a police speed check along Springvale Road, Kingsworthy, during their recent two-week crackdown on speeding motorists. It is possible, however, that even though the police speed camera vans are based in Kingsworthy, that their original lack of support for the imposition of that unnecessary reduction in the speed limit along Springvale Road reflects the greater importance of other, more deserving sites where the speed of motorists may be cause of accidents at specific sites. It should be remembered that the totally unnecessary reduction in the speed limit along Springvale Road originated from the Sophie's Cat campaign, which was latterly taken up by the Liberal Democrats as their What If campaign. And this has eventually resulted in the totally unnecessary expense of the imposition of a lower speed limit on a road where the injury accident stats had shown that there wasn't a problem with the speed of vehicles along that road, but more the possibility of skidding out of a side road into the path of vehicles already travelling on the Springvale Road due to the poor surface adhesions in the wet. Tony Stevens, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
And that concludes the letters for this week, and thank you to all our correspondents. Now we have your say. PM Boris Johnson is planning to suspend Parliament over Brexit. We asked people what they think, and David has the answers.
Lawrence Hunmix, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, who is 39 and a graphic designer of Fordington Road, says, Brexit has been going on for too long. It needs to be put to an end sooner rather than later, one way or another. Aaron Burrows, 20, student of Winnell Mannel Road, Winchester, said, I've avoided reading most things as I'm very angry about it all. I don't agree with his actions at all. And Patrick Payne, 68, a retired warehouse worker of Stanmore, said, well, Brexit needs to be done with one way or another, so I say get it done. And Jane Risness, a retired business analyser of Southampton, said, I'm absolutely outraged. Alongside 1.3 million others, I signed the petition against what he is doing.
And here's Jane with Belgarum, an alternative look at the news.
And there are three little items in Belgarum this week. The first, sign of the times at a pub. A well-known village pub, public house that underwent an extensive revamp just a few months ago, has already been left with damage. The Cart and Horses pub in Kingsworthy had the work carried out earlier this year, including modern-looking new signs, and reopened in May. However, since then, the main sign has already been left bent and twisted, presumably after being hit by a vehicle. Belgarum certainly hopes the damage wasn't caused by a driver who might have been in the pub for a pint or two. And there's the photo of the very attractive, newly revamped Kingsworthy pub with all its flowers outside and a new sign, I believe, and the cars parked, but a very bent-over sign saying Cart and Horses. And the second little item is Reach for the Sky. This is the unbelievable sunflower grown by Kingsworthy man Kenneth Jones, measuring in at more than 11 feet tall. Mr. Jones, a retired butcher who spent more than a decade serving in the Royal Hampshire Regiment, said the giant sunflower grown in his back garden in Mountbatten Place measured in at 11 feet 7 inches. Mr. Jones, who turned 79 this weekend, says he grows the sunflowers every year, with last year's flower reaching 12 feet. He said, "It's unbelievable. I showed it to a friend and he said, 'You got that from a jungle, didn't you?'" The secret to growing a tall sunflower, according to Mr. Jones, was good manure and watering them daily. He added, "I don't know what my water bill will be." However, Mr. Jones's sunflower is dwarfed by the record holder. That measured in at 30 feet 1 inch and was grown by Hans-Peter Schiffer in Karst, Nordrhein-Westfalen, Germany, in August 2014. Mr. Hans-Peter is a veteran of tall sunflowers, having held this record three times before. And the third little item is tribute to the Railway Inn. Winchester pub, the Railway Inn, has made the pages of the national magazine Record Collector. The pub on St Paul's Hill, is celebrating its 50th anniversary as a venue in 2020. Twyford rock promoter and writer Oliver Gray has penned a tribute to the pub, citing its history as a launchpad for artists that have gone on to fame and glory. Back in the early 1970s, there was Robin Hitchcock. In the 1980s, PJ Harvey. And more recently, Frank Turner and Andy Burrow's drummer with Razorlight. All have benefited, says Oliver, from the railway's cosy facilities and nurturing atmosphere. Oliver adds, "Like so many small venues, the railway has been through difficult times and has to punch above its weight in order to survive. It is currently in the reliable hands of Dan Lloyd, who is a stalwart of the Music Venues Trust. No wonder the recent film Lifeblood, setting out the ethics of live music venues, was shot at the railway."
And back to politics. Heather has Letter from Westminster by George Hollingbury, MP.
And George Hollingbury writes, "Who knows what may have happened in Parliament regarding Brexit by the time you read this? We may even be in a general election campaign, but I think it's important to give my general thoughts. I cannot support those Remain MPs who I believe want to use Parliament to try to stop Brexit. I understand they are saying it's to avoid a no-deal Brexit, but there was a deal available, so this cannot really be true. That deal was rejected by Parliament three times, and I'm increasingly of the view it's because this largely Remain Parliament cannot bring itself to finalise leaving the EU. Now, if Parliament had been sovereign on this issue and not given the responsibility for the decision to the electorate in the form of a referendum, then MPs would be on slightly firmer ground, however it didn't. Parliament legislated for a referendum and said it would honour the result. For Parliament to continue to ensure we remain in the EU using an unacceptable no deal looks undemocratic and dangerous. And that's because fundamentally democracy is about having your say, not getting your way. Whatever the issue, whatever the cost, whatever the rules and processes, always. Now, I very much hope the Prime Minister can reach a new deal with the EU, and I believe he wants one. But I cannot understand why MPs who say they are opposed to no deal are undermining his negotiating position and so making it more likely to happen unless their real goal is no Brexit. But perhaps the most striking point, and one that's really worrying me, is this. What if Brexit is delayed or already has been delayed as you read this? What then? More of this? More division? More attempts to ignore the referendum result? Can it really go on? Well, as you can imagine, many people write to me on this issue, so I will reprint here the final part of my reply, which I hope conveys my fear Parliament is on a dangerous road, even though I voted to remain in 2016. I have never hidden the fact that I would prefer to leave with a deal and continue to believe this is the best way forward. Plainly, it has to be preferable to leave the EU in a way that does as much as can be done to mitigate the economic effects of doing so. I am more than well aware of the economic damage that a no-deal exit may incur. One of my key roles as a minister was to deal with the plans for just such an eventuality. But this comes down to more than economics. It is about faith in the political system, and however much I weigh this in the balance against the economic cost, I cannot persuade myself that undermining the fundamental tenets of government by consent is worth the trade. If we do not leave, we risk enormous disengagement from the political process by millions of people who were told many times their vote would be honoured. I understand others profoundly disagree with me, but it is much easier to quantify a cost of an action you can put on a spreadsheet than one whose consequences may be less defined, but potentially more profound. As such, if a deal cannot be agreed with the EU for a reasonable exit, I believe we have no option but to leave without a deal. George Hollingbury, MP.
Back in time we go now, 25 years ago with David.
Yes, 25 years ago, Friday, September the 2nd, 1994. Protest and civil liberty groups from all over Hampshire are being urged to have a final fling before their activities become illegal. Tom Fox from South Hampshire Freedom Network told the groups at a public meeting in Winchester that the new Criminal Justice and Public Order Bill is due to be passed in October. It will effectively criminalise most of their activities, he said. Before that happens, the network, which acts as a link between diverse action groups throughout the country, is organising a national week of peaceful protests while they are still legal. It will be called Do It Yourself Week and will run from September the 19th to the 27th. Mr. Fox urged the Hampshire groups to do their own thing during the week to publicise their campaigns. Do what you normally do by way of protest. You'll find a lot of support will come your way if you tell people what you are doing, he said. When the bill is passed, the network plans to organise a similar protest week, but it will then be illegal. It will be a week of rolling mass action across the country, he said. We'll need to be in large groups. And then a second article. A mission to change the hearts and minds of Winchester people on waste management has been launched by the City Council. A plan costing £119,500 was unveiled on Tuesday to provide almost 9,000 Winchester homes with a door-to-door collection vehicle which will pick up recyclable materials separated out into carrier bags by the individual householder. We've moved on a bit since then, haven't we? The experimental service will begin for 4,000 homes on Winchester's northern outskirts, Sutton Scotney, South Wanston, Littleton, Mitchell-Dever, Abbotsbarton, Kingsworthy, Sparsholt, Crawley and Hursley in April. 6 months later, in October, parts of Winchester Town and the southern outskirts, totalling 4,700 homes, will be brought into the scheme. St Cross, Romsey Road, Oram's Arbour, Sparkford Road, Full Flood, Chilbolton Avenue, Brassey Road, College Street, Twyford, Shawford, Compton Down and Otterbourne. In a report to the City Council Environmental Health Committee, Chief Environmental Health Officer Les Feetham said, Experience has shown that the new traditional bring systems are unlikely to result in more than 12 to 14% of recyclable material being recovered. Thus, curbside collection is essential.
And 50 years ago with Jane.
50 years ago was Saturday, September the 6th, 1969. The Winchester Horticultural Society returned to the main hall at Winchester Guildhall for the first time since before the war for their annual show last Saturday, and they celebrated the occasion with the biggest ever entry of exhibits. The total, almost 650, was twice as large as last year, and the uniformly high standard paid tribute to the efforts made by local growers during the past year. The most successful exhibitor was the Society's chairman, Mr. W.J. Keenlyside, who, in addition to taking several prizes in individual classes, won the Northlands Challenge Cup for the exhibitor gaining most points and the Boots the Chemist's Prize for the amateur gaining most points. The Mrs. R.U.C. Corbett Challenge Cup for the best exhibit of dahlias was won by Mr. J. Primer of Bishopstoke, who also carried off first prize for the Dahlia Championship Cup. And the second little item. Before any final decision on the siting of the controversial refuse disposal depot at Otterbourne is made, local residents are to be given a chance to have their say. This was agreed as last week's Winchester meeting of Hampshire County Council Planning Committee, when members were told that a meeting with local residents was to be held at Winchester, possibly on October the 9th. The committee appointed the chairman, Lord Porchester, or the vice-chairman, Rear Admiral R. Alexander, and Mayor R. McNair Scott, to represent it at the special meeting. In his report to the committee, the Assistant County Planning Officer, Mr. John Finney, told members that their plea to the Minister of Housing and Local Government to determine the application for the refuse disposal plant, incinerator and depot had been rejected.
And Heather's going back 100 years.
To Saturday, September the 6th, 1919. The Winchester City Council War Memorial Committee met at the Guildhall on Tuesday evening to consider the alternative proposals of the County War Memorial Committee, in which the City Committee have been asked to cooperate for the provision of a war memorial gate at the north entrance to the Cathedral Close, viz. From Market Street, as also laying out of a site on the north side of the cathedral, in the centre of which it is suggested that a memorial cross should be erected. And the second item. The Winchester Ladies Swimming Club is to be congratulated on the spirited manner in which it kept going throughout the years of the war. Still greater credit is due to it for the impetus the club has given to the useful and healthful art in the comparatively short period of its existence. And much of this is attributable to the ability and enthusiasm of the instructress, Miss Algar.
And finally, here's David, 200 years ago.
200 years ago, Monday, September the 6th, 1819. The first of these two is rather obscure, I'm afraid. On Wednesday, Harrison, the Stockbridge Reform preacher, was liberated, two persons each having become his sureties for £250. It is not expected that his trial will come on this session. He has a right to traverse. I think traverse means that he can pass through the county or something like this. The second one, a well-contested trotting match took place last week at Fareham between two mares called Silvertail and Smoothface. They started from the Red Lion Inn and went to Wimmering Turnpike Gate and back, a distance of 9.5 miles.
Wow. And now Jane's going to read this week's editorial comment.
And this week's comment is putting his money where his mouth is. Whatever your political persuasion, there is no denying Winchester's MP has put his money where his mouth is. On Tuesday night, Steve Brine, a former minister, put his career on the line when he chose to defy the government and join the rebel bid to prevent a no-deal Brexit. As the Chronicle went to press, it had not been confirmed whether Mr. Brine, who has been the city's MP since 2010, had lost the whip and been effectively expelled from the party, as promised by Prime Minister Boris Johnson. A statement from the Winchester Conservative Association did not seem to provide much clarity on whether he would continue as the party's candidate in future elections either. It would have been all too easy for Mr. Brine to roll over and toe the party line to protect and progress his Westminster career. But he has answered those critics who questioned where he was during the Brexit demo at the weekend through his actions in the House of Commons. Of course, at the rate things are changing at this comment piece may be irrelevant by the time you read it.
And question and answer. Heather has a resident of Winchester's view of the city. Who is it this week, Heather?
Writing about my Winchester, answering questions about my Winchester, is Victoria Burt, aged 36, press officer for Play to the Crowd, arts charity in Winchester, incorporating Theatre Royal. And she tells us what she thinks of the city. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? Well, there are too many. Gurkha's Inn for their authentic Nepalese, Overdraft Craft, Ale Bar for their pork belly mac and cheese, and soon our theatre's newly refurbished cafe bar for its coffee and cake. Well, what's your favourite pub or bar? After work, the Mucky Dug and our cafe bar will be perfectly situated. For quirkiness, the Black Boy. For its secluded garden, the Willow Tree. I'm also desperate to try Incognito for their theatrics. What's your favourite shop? Consortium for their unique and reasonably priced gifts. Favourite building? Oh, I should say the theatre. To stand on the stage or in the auditorium when it's empty is a privilege. Or the Church of St Lawrence and its surrounding architecture steeped in history. Well, what's your favourite view? At Hat Fair, it was the West Gate as the carnival went by. Or Weir's Walk by the river. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Kevin, the big issue man, always happy. What is Winchester's best kept secret? The alternative entry into the theatre's lighting box. What is the best thing about Winchester? It's ancient streets, as they're so peaceful and beautiful. And the worst? Living costs. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? I've just left London after 10 years, so I'd like more diversity. Describe Winchester in a sentence. Historical, beautiful, in parts surprising, in parts in need of a shake-up.
Now, here's a brief survey of what's on. On Tuesday, September the 10th, there's a lunchtime recital in Winchester Cathedral at 1 p.m. with George Cook, cello, and Tom Jesty, piano. Free entry, but a retiring collection. On Saturday, September the 14th, Royal Marines Association Concert Band with Portsmouth Military Wives Choir in Romsey Abbey, doors opening at 7 p.m. The conductor will be Lieutenant Colonel Chris Davis, our own Mary Davis's son, who gave such a memorable presentation at our AGM last April. Reserved seats cost £15 and unreserved are £10. And lighting up times. Today, Friday the 6th of September, the sun rose at 6:26 a.m. and will set at 7:41 p.m. On Wednesday, September the 11th, the sun will rise at 6:34 a.m. and set at 7:29 p.m. Now we have items of general news, starting with Heather.
And this is a warning about road pavements. There are going to be pavement closures for replacement works on the High Street. So in the long run, that'll be good because the pavements won't be all up and down. But in the short run, some of them are going to be closed. Work to renew Winchester's crumbling paving gets underway next week, with phased pavement closures for the next few months. Hampshire County Council's highways team will renew the paving on the High Street between Tower Street and Southgate Street from Monday, September the 9th. To access to businesses, the work will be done by closing sections of the footway during the day for 8 weeks. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "Renewing the paving slabs in this busy area of Winchester is part of our programme to make Hampshire's roads and footways more resilient to the impact of heavy traffic and winter weather. This area of Winchester particularly suffers from vehicles pulling up on the footways, which damages the paving slabs over time, and so a programme of replacing them will soon be underway. We are looking at how we can better manage deliveries from goods vehicles as part of the Winchester Movement Strategy." And there's a picture of a big yellow sign in the high street saying work starts here from 9:30 to 8:30 from the 9th of September for 8 weeks. And there's a phone number as well on that, 0300 555 1388.
This article, it says that you can have a go at balancing Winchester City Council finances. Have a go at balancing the books. Residents can have a go at seeing whether they can balance Winchester City Council finances with an interactive budget simulator that has been launched. The online budget simulator will allow people to balance a virtual council budget, registering their priorities for where money is spent and saved. The simulator will also enable residents to give their ideas and approaches to balance the budget direct to the council. Councillor Neil Cutler, Deputy Leader and Cabinet Member for Finance and Risk, said, "This isn't an easy time for local government as there are some significant financial challenges facing us. There will be tough decisions for the council to take over the coming years. The budget simulator will give us a sounding of residents' views, which we will take into account during the budget setting process. The simulator enables residents to change the levels of expenditure and saving across the main services the council provides and shows the impact of their choices. Data and feedback from all these activities will be reported during the budget setting process over the coming months. The simulator can be accessed at winchester.budgetsimulator.com until Sunday, September the 29th.
And here, following the letter about the run to Giessen, is the article Relay Runners Reach Giessen. A team of Winchester runners have run 540 miles across five countries in 8 days to reach its twin town of Giessen. The runners handed the baton back to the Giessen runners, who first brought it to Winchester last October, and they did it 2 days quicker. The mayor, Councillor Eleanor Bell, had sent the runners on their way from Guildhall on Friday, August the 23rd, and the Lord Mayor of Giessen, together with Winchester's former mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, and his wife Anne, were there at the finish line to greet them on Friday. Over the last 20 kilometres of the run, many of the Giessen team gradually joined the Winchester runners in a spirit of camaraderie. The runners were even given a police escort for the final 2 kilometres as they entered the town. Organiser of the event, Adrian Houghton, said, "It was quite an emotional experience and we were truly humbled by the fantastic reception we were given by the Giessen runners." The team had to cope with very hot conditions, with temperatures soaring to 35 degrees centigrade at times. Their route took in the South Downs Way, then along the coast to Dover for the ferry to Calais. Through France, Belgium, the Netherlands and Germany, they ran on a mixture of roads, cycleways, canal towpaths and forest trails. The youngest two runners were just 11 years old and the oldest two were 67. The day after completing the relay, the whole team ran in the Giessen 5 kilometre park run. They had some remarkable successes in that too. Stanley Parkinson celebrated his 12th birthday by being the first person home in a new age-related record of 18 minutes, 17 seconds. His mum Sam and dad Andy also set new course records for their age groups. Husband and wife, Stephen Gill Goodwin, did the same in their age group, as did Annie Jones. Amazing achievements, given the long distance they had just covered. Through sponsorship and donations, the team expects to raise £3,600 for the Winchester Hospice Appeal. Anyone wanting to see the daily blog and pictures taken on the run can visit the website run870.co.uk. And I think after that journey, they deserve to raise more than that for the wonderful Winchester Hospice Appeal.
The Festival of Local Heritage. Andrew Napier writes, for the organisers of the annual Winchester Heritage Open Days, the aim is quite simple, to make local people become tourists in their own city and to treasure the treasures on their doorstep. The intention is to encourage us to view our home city with fresh eyes. And the days have been running for 25 years, and the programme that celebrates local history is bigger than ever. There are more than 140 events over 10 days between Friday, September the 13th, and Sunday, September the 22nd, making it now the country's largest heritage festival. And everything is free, though some events need to be booked. And there are pictures of two places. One is the Great Hall in Winchester, and the other is a charming little eel house in Alsford, which will be open to the public. There will be guided tours, expert talks, live music and theatre, with the themes this year of food and drink and people power. Just turn up to a celebration of Hampshire treasures at the Great Hall on Saturday and Sunday, September the 14th to 15th. Alsford Eel House on Sunday, September the 15th. Winchester College Treasury, September the 19th to the 22nd. Winchester Cathedral on Thursday evening, September the 19th. Events that need to be booked include, on Saturday the 14th and 21st, Steve Jarvis talking on Winchester through postcards and local World War I and World War II memorials. A guided walk with architect Hugh Thomas on Peninsula barracks that he helped to save on Friday, September the 20th. A tour of the award-winning Winchester University Chapel with design engine architects. TV presenter Alastair Stewart on September the 20th and Jane Devonshire, MasterChef winner, on September the 21st are giving talks. Also this year, the City of Winchester Trust, the city's preservation watchdogs who help with the festival, are holding an exhibition at the Heritage Centre on Upper Brook Street. The theme is Winchester's conservation area, looking at the diverse buildings in the city centre. Special fundraising event is being held on Thursday, September the 12th at the Discovery Centre on Drury Street with Professor Martin Biddle, the eminent archaeologist, giving a talk on why the Anglo-Saxons built a church in the middle of Winchester in the 17th century, where it was at that time a completely ruined Roman city. Tickets cost £14 for that special fundraising event and are available from www.winchesterheritageopendays.org. Professor Biddle led several hugely important archaeological digs in the city between the 1960s and the 1980s and is still involved as an advisor for the Central Winchester Regeneration, also known as Silver Hill.
This is about Marwell Zoo's efforts to help save a particular type of zebra in Kenya, I think it is. There is, in fact, a healthy grevious zebra at Marwell Zoo at the moment. There may even be more, but I think there's certainly one. The operator of Marwell Zoo has launched a fundraising appeal to help save the endangered zebras currently under threat from drought. Conservation charity Marwell Wildlife has been working to support the grevious zebra in Kenya for more than 20 years. And this year, Kenya is once again experiencing a drought. Marwell's conservation biologist Tanya Langenhorst said, "Lactating females and foals are particularly at risk and affected by the prolonged drought, as the mothers need to drink daily to provide milk. but the foals are not strong enough for the extra long walks and can die of either starvation or from the strenuous trips. With this in mind, we would lose a whole year of breeding. Working with the Greaves Zebra Trust, Marwell Wildlife is buying 500 bales of hay and transferring them on lorries across rough terrain to the remote areas that desperately need it.
And here we have Council to press on with the revamp of St Morris's Covert. It is time we got on with this project, civic chiefs have said, after approving an additional £90,000 to improve part of the city centre. Winchester City Council's Cabinet was asked for the additional funding for the St Morris's Covert scheme, bringing the total to £225,000 after officials admitted underestimating the cost of the scheme. According to a report, the Business Improvement District have committed £8,000 and the Steele family £5,000 towards the improvements, the remaining £77,000 funded by reserves. The project, being funded mostly by the Town Forum and the City Council, seeks to improve St Morris's Covert, the link between the High Street and the Outer Close, to reduce its neglect and magnetism for antisocial behaviour. The aim is to declutter the space, removing the waste bins and bollards and improving the lighting, with a new ceiling and paving laid to make the area more attractive. City Council leader, Councillor Lucille Thompson, told the Cabinet, "It is time we got on with this project. It's been hanging around for too long." Speaking through Councillor Steve Miller, Councillor Caroline Brooke questioned the transparency of the project. But Cabinet leader, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, said meetings had been held and said progressing the project is the right thing to do. As previously reported, the report outlining the request for funds said, "Additional work on the scheme, including a number of design changes and more broadly escalating costs associated with this type of enhancement project, has seen project cost, including contingency, rise up to £225,000. In particular, the procurement of the surface works at the start of this year saw quotes return significantly higher than expected and considerably above the cost estimates originally produced when the original budget was set in 2017. However, the report added some of that money could be returned to the reserves depending on the outcome of a grant application. It said, "The Council has also submitted an expression of interest in Historic England's High Street Heritage Action Zone scheme, citing the covert works with a request for a £100,000 contribution towards its costs." And this includes a photograph, two photographs, one of the front of St Morris's Covert next to the Debenhams windows with the flower sellers on the right-hand side and the little church entrance at the back, and it seems to have particularly a new ceiling and lighting there. And another of the back of the covert, the other end of the little church and next to the city toilets, which has stone block seats to sit on by the looks of it and a new flooring. I hope they don't lose. There are several memorials down there. And I'm also rather sad to notice that all the bicycle stands, which are rather crucial, seem to have been dismissed as well.
Protesters urge MP to oppose M3 plans. I'm sorry, we're back to the motorway again after all those letters. Climate activists who protested outside a council meeting and called for the scrapping of a £130 million M3 scheme have written an open letter to Winchester's Member of Parliament. It comes after Winchester City Council's Cabinet responded to a public consultation to express environmental concerns over the Junction 9 scheme at Winnall due to get underway in 2021-22. Staging a die-in on the steps of Winchester Guildhall, one Extinction Rebellion protester branded that response as woefully inadequate. Now, Extinction Rebellion Winchester has penned an open letter to Stephen Brine, questioning his support for the project. It said, "We have a major puzzle we cannot solve. We are wondering why you are continuing to support the Highway England plans to expand the M3 Junction 9. We ask this because you also insist that you are a champion of the environment and concerned about the impact of climate change. In particular, you often remind voters that you are a long-time supporter of Friends of the Earth National and that you are a founder supporter of Winchester Action on Climate Change, known as WINAC. We would like to respectfully point out the stark incompatibility of your two positions. So we call upon you to withdraw your support for a scheme which is now hopelessly out of date due to the unprecedented rate of global warming. The Government Science and Technology Select Committee has just published its findings, which conclude that to meet vital carbon reductions levels, we simply have to reduce the number of cars on the roads. The letter says that if the work was to proceed, it would result in an increase in traffic and greenhouse gas emissions and will have a significant detrimental effect on biodiversity. As previously reported, the Winchester Green Party echoed calls during the Cabinet meeting last week to scrap the scheme, which aims to reconstruct the junction, a notorious motorway bottleneck. Councillor Frank Pearson, speaking as a non-Cabinet member, said the scheme needed to go ahead to stop vehicles caught in congestion diverting through the city centre and causing more air pollution. He added that electric cars would help tackle the emissions fears. However, Cabinet member Councillor Kelsey Lerney rejected that, saying, "Electric cars are not the answer to everything. They're not the solution to the climate crisis." Councillor Linda Murphy added she would have preferred the money to be invested in public transport. In response to the backlash, a Highways England spokesman said, "With our proposals for improving the M3 at Junction 9, we are aiming to strike the right balance between upgrading this busy junction and respecting the environment. Congestion at the junction is a real issue for safety and has its own environmental cost." Now the consultation on the scheme has closed. Highways England will review the responses. On the project website, it adds, "We expect to submit our application for development consent by the beginning of 2020, and provided it is granted, work will start in 2021. Mr. Bryan has been approached for comment.
This is entitled Lottery Award for Playground. A Winchester primary school is celebrating an award of almost £10,000 in national lottery funding. Week Primary School will use the money to help keep children active in the community. The money will install an open-air outdoor gym on the playground with pedal bikes, cardio and skier equipment. Currently, the school has no supervised community facilities for children's outdoor play and exercise, with a school playground that is bare for a school of its size. It has recently invested in new playground markings and trained pupil-led play leaders. The new funding is from the National Lottery Community Fund, which distributes money raised by National Lottery players for good causes and is the largest community funder in the UK. Rob Harrison, school business manager, said, "We're delighted and forever grateful that the National Lottery Community Fund has recognised that our school is at the heart of the community and the importance of keeping our children, families and wider community active. Now, thanks to National Lottery players, we will be able to offer supervised facilities for our children to use and enjoy, as well as the wider community for the many events we host throughout the year."
And now, workout for baby care. Fitness fanatics will work out 12 hours straight to raise money for the special care of babies. 50 Winchester members of Dawnbreakers Early Morning Fitness Club will be doing high-intensity interval training this Saturday, September the 7th, to raise money for the Royal Hampshire County Hospital's special care baby unit. For Emma Swift, Winchester graphic designer and mother of two, it is a cause close to her heart. Megan was born at 29 weeks, weighing only 3 pounds. Without the incredible team at SCBU, my family would not be whole. We were there for 2 months and the amazing staff worked tirelessly to give us a happy, healthy baby back who has grown from strength to strength, she said. Megan, now 13, plays competitive hockey, a remarkable achievement considering her shaky start in life. This is the fifth time the Dawnbreakers group, which has its headquarters in Andover, have organised a 12-hour event, and the second time it has been held in Winchester. Winchester instructor Maddie O'Neill said, "On our own, as individuals, the world can seem a scary place, but with a team like ours, the way we all come together and stick by each other, supporting each other, celebrating highs and working through lows, we can face anything at all." Last year, the event raised £8,000, which is a target the team want to exceed this year. And there is a photograph of a very enthusiastic team, all in matching T-shirts, planning for their workout for 12 hours this Saturday.
Petrolheads donate £1,000 to Naomi House Hospice. And there's a picture of the cheque being presented by Niall Holden to Susie Simmons from Naomi House, and another one of a lot of fascinating-looking cars. Winchester Auto Barn held its third Breakfast Club meeting, attracting hundreds of petrol heads from across Hampshire. Visitors came to meet like-minded enthusiasts and enjoy the eclectic array of classic and sports vehicles on display. The latest event comes just a month after the successful launch of their new charity music and motoring festival, Winchester Auto Fest, which took place at the garage in July to raise funds for local children's hospice Naomi House and Jack's Place. At the Breakfast Club gathering, Niall Holden, founder of Winchester Auto Barn, presented Susie Simmons from Naomi House and Jack's Place with the cheque for £1,000 from proceeds raised at the event. Niall said, "Supporting the community we operate in is very important to us, and we're delighted to have raised a substantial fund for a really worthwhile local charity." And Susie Simmons, head of regional and corporate fundraising at Naomi House, said, "We are incredibly thankful for the support of Winchester Auto Barn. Autofest was a fantastic event, thoroughly enjoyed by all, that we were delighted to be part of. Having the support of local companies and the community makes such a difference and enables us to support the region's most seriously ill children and young adults. £1,000 is a wonderful amount to receive. It is enough to fund a whole week's worth of nursing care for the children staying at Naomi House and Jack's Place on those good days, difficult days and last days." Winchester Auto Barn has just celebrated its first year of trading at the former Hill Farm garage site. It's on the A30 near Stockbridge. As well as hosting events, the garage offers on-site servicing, repairs and MOTs for both modern and classic vehicles. Winchester Auto Barn also offers for sale a selection of high-quality, iconic classics from the 1960s to the 1980s. Their next Breakfast Club meet is on Saturday, September the 21st, from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. And all classic marks and enthusiasts are welcome.
This is entitled "Villagers Enjoy Animal-Packed Fete." Scores of villagers came out to support one of the last fetes of the summer at the weekend. Byton Village Fete and Dog Show returned on Sunday afternoon, September the 1st, traditionally marking the beginning of the end of summer. The fete was held on Byton Cricket Field with the theme this year of farm animals. Some standout features of the fete included a birds of prey section, including owls and a falconry display, a pen with a couple of llamas. And there's a picture of those two llamas, one of which is grinning rather toothily at the camera. There were the attractions for kids of all ages, including a bouncy castle, a coconut shy, and a striking red and white helter-skelter. The fun dog show attracted numerous entries. As always, the fete had a section with a number of vintage and classic cars. The proceeds will split between the village hall and the church.
And now, pizza delivery chain set to open in week. A new Domino's Pizza takeaway is set to open its doors in Winchester. The chain, which will create 45 new jobs with the new branch, will open its new outlet in Stony Lane Week on Monday, September the 9th. It comes a year after planning approval was given to convert part of an Indian takeaway and restaurant into a Domino's. It has seen the Balaka restaurant split to allow space for the pizza chain to use as a takeaway. Simon Lombardi, manager for the new store that will be named Winchester North, said, "We're thrilled to be opening up a second store for the people of Winchester. Customers can expect quicker delivery times and even more delicious pizzas from us. There are plenty of employment opportunities for people living in the surrounding area, so we look forward to welcoming local residents to join our growing team. In particular, we're searching for delivery drivers, including moped riders." Although the plan for the new outlet was unanimously approved by a planning committee last year, it attracted a number of objections over fears of delivery vehicle taking up parking spaces, creating noise late at night and increasing traffic. Councillor Anne Weir, who objected to the scheme, said, "The situation is exacerbated by clandestine parking throughout the day. A change will have an unsupportable impact. The other problem in this area is litter and refuse. The situation in Acorn Close is simply dreadful." However, planning agent Ozin Roberts defended the proposal, saying the use of bicycles for delivering was becoming increasingly popular. Mr. Roberts said, "The use of the unit will not materially change. While some cars will be used, they will be low and, in our view, will not have a noticeable impact. The proposal will contribute to local economic development."
The date has been set for the city annual fireworks bonfire display. November the 9th will be the date of the charity bonfire and fireworks display in Winchester. With its usual sell-out attendance of over 20,000 people, the Winchester Roundtable organised event, now in its 61st year, is the city's largest one-day charity event. The event starts at 5:30 p.m. at the Guildhall with singing from the Winchester Rock Choir, and then the torchlit parade will set off from King Alfred's statue through the city centre to the River Park Leisure Centre. The bonfire will be lit at 7:15 p.m. and the fireworks start at 7:45 p.m. So close your windows if you don't like lots of big bangs. Last year, the event raised over £65,000 in profit, which directly goes to local people and charities who apply to the Winchester Roundtable Community Services Fund. Charlie Sell, Bonfire Chairman 2019, said, "Winchester's Bonfire and Fireworks is a huge event for the city, bringing 20,000 people into the city centre, supporting local business, raising the profile of the city, and ultimately creating a large pot of money which goes straight back into helping the local community. We encourage charities and local groups who really need funding to get in touch with us and apply. Tickets will be available to buy in advance online from September the 1st. At www.winchesterbonfire.co.uk, where people will be able to find out more details of the event and will be available from ticket venues throughout the city during October and November. Standard ticket prices will be at the early bird discount of £5 per person, and the price on Saturday, November the 9th, goes up to £7.50 per person. The popular premium ticket tent tickets, inclusive of hospitality drinks, are set at £35 per person. Winchester Round Table is a social group of 28 young men aged 18 to 45 who want to make a difference to their local communities and find lasting friendships. The Winchester Round Table organisation has been running since the 1930s, and nationally, round tables raise over £3.3 million a year for charity.
And that's all we have for you this week. Please return the memory stick in the yellow wallet as soon as you have finished with it. And thanks to this week's editors, Sonia, Jane and Sheila. And thanks to all the other volunteers who prepare and dispatch our free recordings, both of the newspaper and the magazine, to you. Goodbye from today's readers, Heather.
Goodbye.
David.
Goodbye.
And Jane.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me, Noel Thorpe Tracy. I hope you have a very pleasant week. Thank you for listening. Goodbye. And that's all we have for you this week. Please return the memory stick in the yellow wallet as soon as you have finished with it. Thanks to this week's editors, Sonia, Jane and Sheila, and thanks to all the other volunteers who prepare and dispatch our recordings for you. And goodbye from today's readers, Heather, David and Jane, and goodbye from me, Noel Thorpe-Tracy. I hope you have a very pleasant week. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.